Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 72 for August 29th, 2008. Now more compatible. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by Visa. We all have things we like to think about. Online fraud shouldn't be one of them. Because with every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. And by GoToMeeting. Online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show in which we talk deeply, profoundly, thoroughly, well, frankly, to exhaustion. Even
occasionally.
Some would say to nausea about Windows, Microsoft, Zune, Xbox, with a little Apple thrown on the side. Mr. Paul Thurrott, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon or morning.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening. So today we are going to embrace and extend the world of Windows. Alfred Hitchcock would have really dug this whole computer thing. He would have said, well, not dug, he would have gotten a lot of mileage out of it, let's put it this way. Another device with which to torture the viewers.
You're black. Some kind of a Rod Serling thing, you know, our over-reliance on computers.
Picture, if you will, a man trapped in the Windows zone. Yeah, that I could see. That I could really see.
It's like when you're trying to delete a folder and Vista keeps telling you you can't.
You may not.
Well, there actually never says you can't. It always says try again.
Yeah.
And then it never works.
Give it a shot. Give it another shot, bucko.
Oh, come on. You got it. This time I think it's going to work.
It might work this time. Yeah, that's really kind of, that's kind of almost mean. They really should just say, sorry, you know, this, it, I love the message. There's a couple of error messages. One I get from Simple Mail Transport, SMTP, which says, sorry, it didn't work out. Try again another time. We've been trying to connect for a long time and it just isn't working. Sorry.
Now, the one that's been biting me lately is I believe it's Vista specific, but it's a bug with USB attached storage. And if you have folders inside of folders, you go to delete the outside folder, and it won't let you do it. And you go through a series of prompts, including a UAC prompt, and then it just says, you know what? Try again.
Yeah.
But if you go into the folder and delete inside the folder, you can delete that stuff, and then come back out and delete the folder, then it works.
Oh. It should just say, come on, guy, you're trying to delete from outside the folder. Get with the program.
I think once you click on the UAC prompt, it should just do whatever you want, even if it's destructive to the system.
Yeah, you've told it. I know what I'm doing.
I want you to delete this folder right now.
That's a good point. UAC is enough. If you're going to go that far, if you're going to ask me about that, just do it.
Yes. If you're going to blank the entire screen and make me deal with the dialogue.
Just do it.
Are you sure? Because you haven't jumped through enough hoops yet.
Just do it. All right, Paul. Coming up in just a bit, we're going to get Paul's take on Internet Explorer 8.
It's almost here.
But before I do, I just want to mention something. A new sponsor. I think a new sponsor to Windows Weekly. I don't think we've had this company on before. We had Citrix on before. We go to my PC. Citrix does great software. They know better than anyone the underpinnings of Windows. That's why they're so good at remote access. That's why GoToMeeting works better than any other online meeting program for Windows. Or for Mac, by the way. They do it for the Mac now, too. These guys have got it down. They are the premier company in this. If you're doing meetings on the, conference calls, because nowadays I think we're all doing a lot more conference calls. We don't want to travel. We don't want to, fly or drive if we can avoid spending the money on the gas. So we do a lot more conference calls. But the problem with conference calls, very hard to keep people's focus. With GoToMeeting, suddenly it's fun. It's entertaining. It's interesting. Whether it's a sales presentation and you can show them your PowerPoint, or it's a collaborative meeting with colleagues, or you're working on documents together, or maybe it's a training session. GoToMeeting's perfect. Easy to install. Very simple for your clients and colleagues. All you do is you send them an invitation. You can either send them an email or just say over the phone, hey, the meeting ID is, you know, it's like a six-digit number. They go to GoToMeeting.com and they enter in that number, and all of a sudden, boom, they're seeing your computer screen on their desktop. So they see the PowerPoint as it's moving. If you're collaborating on documents, you could say you can work together on the same document, or you could say you take control. It's yours now. It's good for training for that reason. Even if you are the only person with a copy of that program, you could say, let me show you how the program works. You're using it. Then you say, okay, now you take control and you try it. And they don't have to have it on their system. They can use it through your system, through GoToMeeting. It's that fast. It's that effective. Very simple to set up. You don't need the IT department involved. I want you to try it free. 1 month, unlimited meetings for GoToMeeting. A 30-day free trial. All you have to do is go to gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. That's gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly and sign up today. Online meetings made easy. Go to gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly for one free month, unlimited meetings. Gotomeeting.com. You're going to love it. Okay. Yep. So we were talking on Security Now about the Black Hat presentation about Vista Security.
It's
true.
UN Steve Gibson.
It's theoretically true that you can, you know, that DEP and the randomization of data space and all of that stuff, it can be, you know, bypassed. The problem is, you know, it's turn DEP on by all means. The problem is that there are programs like Internet Explorer 7 that don't work with DEP. Now, I understand IE8 is getting close. And it will work with DEP.
Actually does work with DEP.
So that's, I think, if for no other reason, a compelling reason to go to IE8. What else is new in IE8?
There's all kinds of stuff new. But, you know, I would say before getting into the features, the one thing that I've been a little surprised by on the bad side is it just doesn't work right with most of the sites I visit many of the sites.
That's not good. I thought it was more standards compliant.
It is, and that's what's bizarre about it. I think what's happening is that people who own websites and develop for websites are looking at the browser string, and they see that it's IE, and they throw something weird
that's
at it.
That's exactly what's happening, yep.
I think. But the thing that's really strange, and this is the weird part, Gmail is a good example. If you go to the Gmail site with IE8 in the standard rendering mode, it's all messed up. But you can click a little button up in the address bar for compatibility view. And what it will do is switch IE into compatibility mode just for that site. So you can do it on a site-by-site basis. So you think, well, okay, now it's going to work. But even in compatibility view, there are rendering bugs. So Gmail specifically, it's not as bad. You know, for example, the main Gmail page where you see your inbox actually renders fine in compatibility view. But once you enter a message, it's not, you know, it's not horrible. It's not way off to the side of the screen or anything, but it is not lined up correctly, right? You can see visual mistakes. So it kind of leaves you in a weird spot. I mean, I want to test this thing and use it and be able to write about it, but, you know, I mean, that's the site. I'm on that site all day long, and it's not, I would say, maybe, okay, in this case, it's not bad enough that I can't use the site, but I'm really kind of surprised it doesn't work better.
Yeah, I am too. But it's... Is this beta 1 or are we at beta 2?
No, this is beta 2, and that's the other thing. So beta 1, which came out in late March, I want to say, was the release aimed at developers, right? So they introduced the rendering mode and some low-level features for developers. There's a new developer window and some other features along those lines. They also introduced a couple of end-user features, but they were saying, look, wait for beta 2. Beta 2 is going to be the one for, you know, for people. There's going to be functional updates. And sure enough, there are. And some of them are very, very cool. But I also get the, you know, they didn't say it this way, but I asked, you know, what comes next? Is there going to be a beta 3 or do we go right to release candidate, or are you just going to release the thing? And their response was, well, we're going to see what the feedback is to beta 2, and then we'll move on from there. And I'm going to be surprised if a lot of people don't have a lot of problems with this as far as the compatibility goes. Now, functionality-wise, good stuff, right? It's a lot faster. If you look at all the little bits that make up the browser, you know, the address bar, the search box, the tabs, all that stuff has been improved dramatically. And some of those improvements are really, really cool. I also sort of wish that you could install this thing alongside IE7, by the way. That would make life a little easier. You know, so that if you were an IE user and you had to have something work.
It's sad. They've never done that with IE. It's always replaced the previous version. Whereas Firefox, you can have multiple versions. It just drives me crazy. It's not that hard to do, gang.
Right.
Maybe it's because it's so tightly integrated into Windows that it is in fact hard to do. I don't know.
That was always the excuse, but supposedly in Windows Vista, that's no longer the case. So, I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, boo-boo. It's a pickin' and biscuit.
It's nice. Look, it's nice. You know, they have some things like tab grouping, which I think is great. They do some really smart things with the address bar and with the search box. When you start typing, it comes down with sort of a rich history in both cases. And search engines can also modify the IE search box so that the search results you see coming down from the box are graphical in nature. You know, they have pictures of images if you're looking at Amazon site, for example. Or if you're searching for images in live, you know, search or something, that's something where they could, you know, program it so that you could see those pictures right in the drop-down box as you're typing. And that stuff's great. You know, so I think from sort of a day-to-day usage standpoint, that stuff's, you know, noticeably better than it was before. They've made some token appeasement type things. You know, one of the issues with IE7, of course, was that they got rid of the regular toolbar and they moved some of the buttons over to the command bar. Now you can optionally move the refresh and stop button back where they belong, you know, up next to the back and forward button, but not the home button. So the home button is still locked down in the command bar. I don't know why, but there it is.
Well, and I guess we should say that we do this every time. We got to caution people about beta and judging betas because there's features, especially with the UI features.
I know.
Right?
And the thing that's really strange about this is I had these guys through my house here about 2 weeks ago, and the comment that I got at the time was, you know, this one's ready for people. It's you know, people can use this. I thought, great, you know. And then I started using, I think the build that they gave me at the time was older. I noticed a couple of things in the actual release of Beta 2 that came out yesterday that were not present in the version I was using. So I sort of raced to reinstall the new, you know, the latest, the final version of Beta 2, just to see, you know, maybe I was missing something. But honestly, you know, the compatibility stuff is still an issue, and that's going to be the thing that's going to bite those regular people. So
that's the fundamental issue on any browser, I think.
Yeah, of course. And in my review, I started off with one of those lines like, you know, sometimes you get what you ask for. You know, be careful because, you know, people have been hammering on Microsoft for years. You got to go standards compliant. You got to go standards compliant. You got, and then they do it. And it's like, oh,
we don't like standards.
Yeah, what happened here? You know, so maybe this is a transition period. You know, maybe between beta 2 and the final release, websites will do what they need to do to make this work correctly. I don't know. But I can say right now, I'm a little concerned about that stuff.
I do think you're right about. I know on my sites we look for IE6 and we modify the CESS because IE6 does weird stuff. But I don't think that the code most people use, I don't think is kind of says, oh, I see IE, I don't know what version it is, do this. I think mostly they're looking for specific versions because Microsoft, frankly, every version changes, breaks the hacks. So IE6 hacks don't work with IE7.
Okay, but my understanding of the compatibility view button is that it makes IE8 render like IE7, but my experience using it
doesn't work.
Says that that's not the case at all.
Yeah. Maybe they forgot to connect it.
Hey, look, I just want it to work in one of the modes. You know,
be one or the other.
You know, I don't mind using the thing. So people who listen to this podcast, obviously, are technical enough. They can probably handle this. They're going to want to see it.
Right.
And they should look at it with the understanding that, you know, in beta 1, I used it very briefly. There were too many problems. I went away. Beta 2, you know, it's right there. But those compatibility issues, I think they're going to bite people a little bit. So I guess we'll see, but definitely look at it. There's an amazing amount of new stuff in there. There's an in-private browsing mode, what people have been calling the porn mode, where it hides all of your tracks as you go along. You know, the tab grouping and coloring is really neat. And so there's stuff like that. You know, the web slice stuff is very interesting in this release. There's a lot of stuff there. So I think it's this is a credible release. I think this is one of those things that at least puts them on even footing, I would say, with Mozilla Firefox, if not a little ahead in a couple of areas. But I have to wonder what the future is here, right? Because, you know, is this the version of the browser that's going to be in the next version of Windows, or is there going to be another version by that time? And if so, how is this kind of a weird release that's in the middle that's not tied to a Windows release? I don't know. You know, I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah. Oh, well. So when did they... What, did they I mean, the world has to work with IE. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, it always works its way out. I mean, we have complaints every time, frankly. But the world has to work with IE.
But that's what I mean.
IE.
In other words, the world has to work with IE because people use IE, but right. People aren't using this browser, right? And if this version of IE proves to be incompatible with so many sites, that's the type of thing that's going to make normal people not want to use it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the end game is there. You know, I suppose at some point, you know, IE8 comes out and you just aren't able to get IE7 as a download unless you buy, you know, unless you get it as part of Windows Vista or something.
You can't get older versions? You can't get like IE5.5 somewhere? Not from Microsoft,
get it somewhere,
I guess.
But I don't think you get it from Microsoft. Huh, I'd be surprised.
That's interesting. Well, you know, obviously this is probably at this point one of Microsoft's most important products. Right up there, right up there with Windows. So I do hope.
And talk about a swing there, right? It went from their least interesting, and now suddenly it's very important again,
right?
Well, yeah, I think they'll get it right, and hopefully, what happens over time is that the website developers look at the facilities that are available to make their sites work properly in this browser. Right. Supposedly, it's not a lot of work to make that happen.
That's the key. So, if it really is standards compliant. And your website has not been standards compliant only because you have to work with IE6, then this is something designers, I think, will be glad to do. Take those hacks out, frankly. As long as people move to IEA, I mean, I would love to drop IE6 support. I really would.
This off the top of your head, what percentage do you know? I mean, you know, what percentage of people are still using IE6 on your site?
On my sites? I don't know. I'll check. IE in general is about 30% or less.
Really?
Yeah. But remember, my site's mostly Firefox, almost all Firefox. Yeah.
Okay.
My sites are a little different than, you know, the average, you know, they're different than AOL.com. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
I think Google Analytics will give me a breakdown. I'd actually be very curious to see. You know what I always say, though? Windows, not walls. That's what I always say.
I've often said that myself.
I thought you seemed like the type that might say that. Would you please tell me what it means?
Well, supposedly that's the moniker, the name, or the code name, or whatever for an advertising campaign that is rumored to be beginning next week, right, with Jerry Seinfeld and.
What's the deal with Windows?
They've got windows,
but they don't have walls. Do they have doors? Do they have windowsills? What's the deal?
Yeah,
I can't wait.
I can't. I mean, I can imagine that's exactly what it's going to be like.
Oh, God. And then Bill comes on and says, well, Jerry. Has Jerry ever shared the stage with Bill on a keynote? I think he has. I know Leno has.
Sure. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, certainly Bill Gates has met every famous person there is, so.
$10 million goes to Jerry Seinfeld for this, $300 million for the campaign in Toto.
Yeah, well, I've said this to Microsoft a few times, and including recently when I talked to David Webster, who is the guy behind that Mojave experiment. And I feel really strongly that Microsoft makes these incredibly funny internal videos that really humanize the company, that feature their executives. Yeah. Yeah. They're almost, and sometimes celebrities.
Yeah.
They show them at trade shows, and they always go over really well.
Yeah.
And I always think, why don't you just use these as advertisements?
Never.
You know,
never
you could strip them down. Well, maybe this is what's going to happen here with Jerry Seinfeld.
I wonder how much they're paying Bill, because I think he's probably more than Seinfeld.
I would imagine this is... he doesn't need the money.
All right, does this mean they're going to... right. Are they going to abandon the Mojave, that whole Mojave campaign, or is this...
No, that's separate but related, right? I mean, this is just a... something that someone in Windows marketing came up with and kind of threw by some executives, and they said, great, let's run with it. And I talked to David Webster just the other day and wrote an article about it. You can see on the Super site. And I think the genesis of that is very interesting because they didn't intend for it to be an ad campaign. It was more along the lines of, we know that people who use Vista really like it. How do we prove that? How do we get that message across to people that don't like Vista, even though they've never used it? And they basically just they went to San Francisco because they knew a lot of Mac users down there, a lot of non-Microsoft people. It would be sort of a hostile environment. And let's find people who are predisposed not to like Vista, and let's show them features based on who they are. You know, if their parents will show them parental controls, if they're kind of hip younger guys, we'll show them the DVD burning, and we'll see what they think. And the response was so overwhelmingly positive, you know, that they said, we got to use this. I mean, this is crazy. And it really sort of verified everything that they thought was the case with Vista, that if you just saw the thing and stopped listening to people who have other motives and just really made your own decision, that you'd actually like it a lot.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about it is the way it's evolved, of course. You remember when it first came out, you know, the critics, of course, come out of the woodwork and, oh, you know, this thing isn't scientific, and who are these people, actors? They must have been using supercomputers, and you know, and I really enjoy Microsoft's response to this in many ways, because as David Webster said to me, you know, is it really so hard to believe, you know, that people would actually like this thing? I mean, really, you know, is this really that difficult to understand that some people might actually really like this?
Frankly, that's my issue with the campaign. Is it just underscored the problems they're having with credibility on Vista? It just kind of, in a way, you know, the first thing you see is the part where they say, well, if Vista stinks, I don't like Vista. That's the first thing you see.
Right.
And how many people, you know, watch 2 minutes in to see the people change their minds?
Okay. Well, I've not seen the, you know, they're going to TV with these ads.
That'll be interesting. I'm sure they'll craft them better. But on the website,
you spend
a minute hearing people diss Vista before you get anywhere.
Well, right. But remember that
Hold on.
Think about the type of people would even know that this existed, right?
Right. It's
the MojaveExperiment.com or whatever is not something my parents would have stumbled upon.
You're right.
You know,
I'll withhold judgment until I see the general TV ads, because that's really going to be it. I have to say, Windows Not Walls, that's very bland.
Oh, I actually kind of like it. I like it because it sort of speaks to a... It's sort of vague and markety and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's my problem with it.
Yeah, but it's a marketing campaign. You know, I don't know that that's going to be the slogan they use.
Right.
That's what they're calling it internally. We'll see. You know, I guess we'll see. I don't want to judge any of this stuff until I see it. But I will say this, because we've talked about this a lot. It's very important that Microsoft at least does something about this.
Yes.
You know, in the sense that...
They have to take the bull by the horns.
I don't have anything personally invested in this. You know, Vista is a success or failure or whatever. I mean, you know, life goes on. Certainly if Vista was a disaster, I would have plenty of things to write about. If Vista is a wonderful success story, I have plenty of things to write about. It doesn't matter either way to me. But my experiences with Vista have been very different from what I see in a lot of the opinion maker type guys.
No, you've won me over. I'm telling people on the radio show, Vista, you know, you've really won me over on that.
Well, I'm not trying to win you over. I mean, I'm...
Well, but in return, I'm telling new users, yes, it's okay. It's safe. The water's fine. Come on in.
There you go.
That's really the message. You know, I think that's the... If I were Microsoft, that's the message. I would say, you might have heard in early days about Windows issues. Windows Vista has been out a year and a half now. The water's fine. Come on in. You're going to love it. You know, any issues that existed have long ago been solved. It's the most secure version of Windows ever. It works better than ever. It's more beautiful than ever. There are no speed issues. It is the platform for gaming. You know, these are all messages that they should get. They should get out there.
Leo, you sound like an infomercial.
I just want $10 million. What's the deal with Windows? So I have the stats for the website.
Okay.
So only 20% of my users to Twit. This is to Twit. Only 20% use IE. Of that. At all. Of that, 78% use IE7. 21% use 6. And it really falls off after that. 0.26% use...
See that one that says 5.01? That's Steve Gibson. I bet you...
What is 5.01? One guy used 5.01. What the hell is that?
I think that's the version that came with Windows 2000, isn't it?
That's it.
What is that?
I don't know. That, I love stats because you see these weird anomalies.
Why is that person even on the web?
I don't know. There's nine people used browser version 9991, which I think is probably not IE, but Opera posing as IE. And then, but you see that there are some people, 269 people used Internet Explorer 8. So some people are using the beta, but by far, more than three quarters use 7.0. Firefox?
Firefox is most.
Oh, yeah, Firefox is. Let me go back to the browsers and show you the total. Firefox is 62%, 20% IE, 14% Safari, 2% Opera, and then it falls off after that.
All right. Jeez.
Well, you know, I probably have a large, because we have a number of Mac podcasts, I probably have a larger number, but I have to say, I bet you it's 10% on a lot of sites now. A lot more Mac users than there used to be. Market share has doubled.
Sure.
No, I think so. Market share is, no, isn't the market share?
No, but that doesn't necessarily equate to you having to be a Safari user.
Oh, that's a good point, too. It could be Windows.
In other words,
Safari.
One of the things I've always said about Apple users or Mac users, I guess, is that, you know, these are people who, by and large, have made very conscious decisions about technology, tend to be more, I don't want to say educated, but more up on tech issues and so forth. And it seems like that crowd would be more inclined to go to Firefox because they know better, right. You know? And I wonder about the people who run Safari, because that almost suggests that the new Mac generation of people is kind of more along the lines of average consumers who are just using what comes in the box.
I just want to say that Safari users spend 50% more time on Twit than Firefox and Internet Explorer users.
So. That says all kinds of things about those people as well.
They're slow. They're slow. They don't change much.
What's going on at the site?
They stay with what they know what they like, and they stay with it, and that's the way it is. I love these kinds of stats, though. Now, my site is totally atypical, I'm sure, because it's geeks. It's highly involved computer enthusiasts. So, you know, we don't get a lot of corporate, probably got a lot of corporate users. I would imagine that the percentage of IE 5 and 6 users goes way up when you start getting those business users who have not upgraded. It's probably quite a few of those.
Sure. Sure.
So you got to tell me.
Yes.
You like your Blackjack? I saw you have the new Blackjack, too.
I do like it. You know, I'm afraid to bring it anywhere near the... I think I turned it off.
This is mobile 6.1.
6.1, yeah. I sort of alluded last week to a crossbar type UI that I thought was part of Windows 7, but actually that UI is pretty much available in Windows Mobile 6.1.
As it should be.
As it should be. And that is actually a decent UI. You know, I would say that the standard Windows Mobile UI, the one that's been around now for several generations of this product, is outdated, you know, kind of old-fashioned. But one thing you can do in 6.1 is switch to this other UI that lets you scroll up and down through major items, like, you know, the top item is a clock, the second one down has your calendar items, third one down has your contacts, and then and so forth and so forth. But as you go up and down, you can also go left and right. So depending on which one you're in, if you go down to calendar, the first item you'll see there in the middle of the screen will be your next item, you know, the next scheduled item in your calendar. But if you go right from there, you'll see the one after that and the one after that. And that's actually a very logical and discoverable user interface. It's nice.
And because most phones have that kind of crossbar navigation mm-hmm. on it, you know, that joystick thing, that just makes sense.
Well, right, yeah. You're right. So, in other words, this particular device has it's probably a four-way scroll pad of some kind. So you go up, down, left, right. Okay. Right. And then there are the ones that have that switch on the side. You can go up, down, you know, mm-hmm. and so forth. But one thing I noticed about this Blackjack in particular, which is, you know, not necessarily an exceptional device. It's very much a standard-looking, you know, Windows Mobile / BlackBerry type phone with your hardware keyboard and so forth. But that wheel in the middle actually is a wheel. You can scroll around on the wheel. So you can actually navigate through that crossbar interface up, down by scrolling.
Oh, neat.
And then toggle left, right to go left and right. So this is nice. I mean, I have a feeling that this sort of phone, and it doesn't have to be running Windows Mobile. I mean, a BlackBerry like this, like a BlackBerry Pearl.
Right.
Or any Windows Mobile type phone, like the Trio Pro or whatever that was called that came out last week.
That new Trio,
Awesome? Yeah. I think any of these would be fine for a lot of people. You know, it's got a decent quality camera. I don't. It's nice.
Fine. They're fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Hey, I had to use. I was in DC and my iPhone stopped working.
Oh boy.
And
which
was disconcerting. You know, one of the things I love about the iPhone, and again, this would probably be true of most of these devices, but I think of it as situational computing, right? So in other words, we went down to DC for sort of a long weekend with the kids, and we're standing in line in the Air and Space Museum. So I have 10 minutes to kill. So you can kind of pop out your iPhone and you know, go through email, right? Maybe not answer anything that's an incredibly long and detailed response, but I can at least move stuff into read mail and you know, get rid of the junk. You know, it's nice for that. But the iPhone stopped working, and for an entire day I was walking around trying to get it. Said I had a 3G signal, couldn't get anything. So I eventually recalled some problems with 3G since that latest update came out. So I actually went into settings and I turned off the 3G antenna, and then everything worked fine, albeit slowly, on the Edge network. And so I actually thought my iPhone was broken. I was really upset about this. I kept re-enabling it, disabling it, trying it again. And after I got home, I turned the 3G back on, and then it started working again. So it must have been something down in DC. I don't know. Very disconcerting, because this one worked fine.
Yeah, I think there's still issues with the iPhone and undisclosed. Although test after test has said that there is no problem with the 3G chipset. But then there's all these stories like yours. That
I have two phones. One worked, one didn't. Yeah. I mean, that's all I'm saying. I you know, when the first iPhone came out, you know, the worst reception I ever had, and you know, but have it still work, was the beach we go to. And you could lay there on the beach with the iPhone in one hand and the Verizon phone in the other one. They both had one bar. And
right.
You'd click on a website, and the Verizon one would load, and then right. You could go eat lunch and get a drink and go swimming and come back and take a nap, and then the iPhone would eventually finish loading the page. And it was, you know, really bad. And I don't know, you know, obviously the new one they've made, the plastic back, I guess, has improved reception and all that kind of thing. But I still think this is kind of uncharted waters here. You know, I think it's just one of those things. It's going to take a few revisions before they get it, you know, right for everybody.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm still very happy with my iPhone. I may have just lucked out. I haven't had since the upgrade to 202. I haven't had any of the problems that I was having before, and none at all. Hey, we were asking. Speaking of security now, I was wondering because we were talking about the fact that .NET also has a problem with DEP, and I was trying to figure out if Silverlight does Silverlight use .NET?
Yeah, Silverlight is based on .NET.
That's what I thought. And certainly Windows Live Mesh does, and that's...
No, you're talking about problems with DEP. So you're saying
can't turn DEP on some on a surprisingly large number of Microsoft programs don't support DEP.
Yeah,
right.
I have very rarely seen a DEP error, although I have seen them, right? Because
Microsoft turns off DEP on its own software.
I see.
So when you enable DEP, you can leave it on, but it doesn't turn it on for things like IE7.
I'm trying to find where the places you can look at DEP.
I think DEP is a brilliant idea, and it's got hardware support. I mean, it's in the chip. The idea is that programs should not be execute. You should not allow a program to execute in the data space. That all of the code should be in the program space. And the reason is very commonly the way you get into a system is using a buffer overflow, which allows you to poison data space, particularly the stack, with code.
Right.
And running code off the stack is you know, how a lot of these exploits work. If you can't run code off of the stack because of data execution prevention, you eliminate a lot of buffer overflow exploits, if not all of them. However, you know, we're still not there yet, because even though the hardware supports it, this happens all the time. The software is still catching up. There are a lot of programs where, for one reason or another, they've decided that it's best to have data executing off the stack or in other data areas. But that's neither here nor there. I think it's critical that Microsoft solve this problem, particularly for Live, for .NET and for Live, because they're going to ask us to be doing cloud computing. It's got to be secure.
Sure. So, but, I mean, are there actual...
There's it's theoretical.
Okay.
But, you know, it doesn't take long between the time a theoretical exploit is discovered. These guys are... I have to say, some of the best work being done in computer science right now is being done by these bad guys, because that's where the money is. And
hey, there would be no good guys without the bad guys.
Yeah, no, it's true. You're very zen today. That's good.
It's
very, very Buddhist.
That one's almost so thoughtless. It's not even worth it.
Let's talk about live. We've got a new, the third wave coming out of Windows Live. I am excited about live. I think live is the most exciting thing Microsoft's done in ages.
Well, okay. So it's funny because the live stuff, like so much of Microsoft, you know, they make a big splash and then it kind of disappears for a little while, you know. You don't hear from them. You know, Zune is like that. So Zune came out with their big stuff last year. 2-3 months ago, they came out with their 2.5 stuff. And then you don't really hear from them too much. And presumably this fall, there'll be more Zune stuff, a new generation of Zune stuff, I guess. But the, you know, the live stuff is kind of like that as well. So that big live suite that came out last year is what Microsoft internally was referring to Windows Live Wave 2. And now they're prepping the release of Windows Live Wave 3. Now, we don't know too much about it yet, but I'm hoping to find out more about this. By the way, I'm going out to the Microsoft campus in about 2 weeks or week and a half, and I put in a request to talk to these guys, and hopefully that will happen, and also with the Live Mesh guys, because I'm very curious about that. But they've actually put up some promo pages now. So, for example, they're talking up a new version of Windows Live Hotmail. And you may recall, it may not have been a big deal in Mac circles, but on the Windows side, you know, a new version of Hotmail was a really big deal because Hotmail is one of those things that people are very comfortable with. And, of course, in the new version of Hotmail, they changed it really dramatically, and a lot of people didn't like that. And one of the things they had to step back on during the beta was they decided to make the old version or something close to the old version available as, you know, the classic UI. So right now there's like these two UIs in Hotmail. You have the new one and the old one,
right?
Which is actually how
Yahoo's doing it too. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you got to do
that. Well, these guys have hundreds of millions of users, so no one thing will be fine for everybody. So apparently, one of the deals with this new version of Hotmail that's coming soon is that they're melding the best parts of both of these interfaces into one UI, and I guess we'll see how that goes over with people, but I am curious about this stuff. There's supposedly there'll be a new version of Movie Maker, you know, Windows Live Movie Maker. And like Windows Live Photo Gallery, this is a product that historically had been part of Windows and was only updated with Windows. But now, you know, by pushing it out of there, they're sort of removing that bundleware issue, you know, the bundling problems
that
Microsoft
has.
But they're also allowing it to be updated more frequently, which I think is the big deal. Because Windows is on whatever schedule it's on, but, you know, sometimes you want to make small updates to a program, and it's not hard to do that to an application, but it is hard to do it when it's part of Windows because there's a much more stringent process you have to go through at Microsoft, obviously, to get something included in any kind of OS update. So, so we'll see. I don't know. I'm curious about it, though.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'd say, you know, by the way, we talked a lot about data sync last week. It's something I've been working on a lot lately because for two reasons. One is for that sort of going all in thing I talked about using Microsoft products. If you want to go whole hog on the Microsoft stuff, you may have to switch from something else. There's a data sync issue there. If you want to talk about the switcher guide, you know, if you want to interoperate between the Mac and Windows, you're talking about data sync.
Right.
And this sort of raises its head when you talk about the Windows Live stuff as well, because one of the things I discovered, I have to say somewhat to my surprise, is that Microsoft actually has a pretty good story as far as creating sort of cloud-based solutions where there's there are desktop options, in this case many desktop options, there are web-based options, and then there are mobile device options as well. So they have stuff that works across all three of those places where you would need to compute. So Hotmail, for example, works on the web, works in email applications, Microsoft email applications primarily, and it works on, you know, mobile devices, Windows Mobile, BlackBerry, whatever.
You know, the good news about the whole security issue is that if you just use Visa,
well, do you wait till I'm drinking just so you can try to get me this new bottle?
I'm trying to get milk to come out of your nose. Yeah, that's why I slowed down. I saw the cup coming to the lip.
Do you have any idea what San Pellegrino will do to a monitor, Leo?
This show brought to you by the good folks at Visa. They remind you when you shop online, you want to use your Visa card because it's safe, it's secure. Visa does more than anyone else to protect you online and off. They have the most sophisticated software to track your transactions, to track all transactions, to prevent to detect and then to resolve online fraud. They do a great job. And I get so many testimonials now from listeners who've heard us talk about Visa who say, yes, it's true. You know, they called me or we had a problem and they reversed the charges. I mean, they're just fantastic. Zero liability. You are not liable for unauthorized purchases. That's the bottom line. That's the peace of mind I'm talking about. That's Visa. Just remember, safe, secure Visa when you shop online. You have a conference call in about 15 minutes. I want to get through a few more things before we get to your software pick and your tip of the week.
Okay.
I'm looking at the list.
Let's skip this stuff. We can skip right over it because that can be fodder for next week.
There's so much to talk about. You know, really, the best thing to do is go to Paul's site, the Super Site for Windows, because he's really, a lot of what you hear about here kind of in brief is discussed in great detail on the site. WinSuperSite.com.
Sure.
I think whatever, clearly, Paul, what's on your mind today when we talk about the show is the stuff that you then write about on the Super Site.
So that makes sense. It's actually sometimes it goes the other way around. You know, so for example, one of the things I'm looking at it is a lot of these set-top boxes. And a lot of this is stuff I haven't written about on the site because I'm working on it right now. So right. I don't know if you've heard that Popcorn Hour machine. I guess there are a few different models. I've got one of those coming today.
Oh, good.
I have a Roku Netflix box.
Player, yeah.
Which I think is actually pretty cool. And actually, I got a new Xbox 360 this week because you can never have too many 360s.
You got a new one. Why'd you get a new one?
Well, winter's coming, Leo, and I need an alternate heat source.
You're getting ready to hibernate.
No, I've.
Do you have a PlayStation 3 as well, or are you just loyal to the Xbox?
I do have a PlayStation 3.
I like the PlayStation 3, but I'm waiting for those games to come out. You know, all the good games are on my Xbox right now.
There was a game that shipped with the console called Resistance.
Fall of Man. Yeah.
Resistance Fall. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the first Xbox games I played, and it's fantastic.
I actually played through that game twice and enjoyed it quite a bit. And
brilliant.
There's a sequel to that coming out this fall. So yeah. I'll have to.
Resistance 2. I'm excited about that. Very excited about that.
That's a good one.
That's a game I used. When I first got the Xbox 360, I used that to show people here's what it can do. Here's the amazing visual quality of this thing.
Yeah. So as far as the podcast versus the site, I mean, sometimes I throw stuff out here because I'm thinking about it, and it's something that will eventually turn into an article. And then sometimes, obviously, it's something that's been going on this week, so it's on the blog or it's on the website. But
did I say PS2? I meant PS3. Somebody said said PS2. No, I meant PS3, of course.
Doesn't matter.
You know what I'm talking about. I never owned a PS2. Believe it or not.
I did, but we didn't. Well. We used it.
Were a lot of good games on that one. But I think we've taken such great strides forward. All right, I'll tell you what. Let me get your Audible pick from you, and then we'll do your software pick, and we'll do your hardware pick. The show brought to you, as always, as all of our Twitch shows are, by Audible. If you go to audible.com/windows, you could get a free book. Now, you have to be a new member, of course, if you're already a member. We just keep listening because we like to give you things you can listen to. Paul, you got a good one this week. Just in time for the election coming up.
Right. Our cable system just switched over. They changed all the channels. So we have all these crazy HD channels now, and we were watching the Democratic National Convention stuff last night on CNN HD, which, you know, I didn't even know existed. And it made me think, you know, one of the things that was cool about the last election was all of the speeches were made available after the fact, you know, as audiobooks and podcasts and so forth. And so I went and looked in Audible, and sure enough, they have an election 2008 page, which you're bringing up here.
And this is free, by the way.
Yeah, this stuff's free, and that's why it's cool. So it's sort of a non-traditional pick, I suppose. But right now, because the Democratic National Convention is going on as we're recording this, that's what they have up there. But when the RNC starts next week, they'll have the speeches from that convention available as well.
I think this is such a nice public service that they provide. Yeah. I love these guys at Audible, and I'm glad you highlighted this. I forgot that they did this. So they've got my wife missed Bill Clinton's speech, so she could listen to it on Audible.
Right. Yeah, actually, as it turns out, I've missed most of the speeches, which I'm a little disappointed in. But, you know, and that was the big surprise from the last election cycle, right, was the Barack Obama speech where no one had heard of this guy.
Right.
And we're listening to the speeches in the car on a CD we had burned. And I'm thinking, who is this guy? This is really interesting. And of course, now he's you know, our the Democratic nominee for president of the United States. So, yeah, I think this is an interesting opportunity to listen to this stuff if you missed it.
And
TV.
Go back in time. They have Barack Obama's, for free again, 2004 speech, the Democratic National Convention. So if you want to hear this speech that everybody, that made everybody sit up and take notice, this stuff is online for free. It's their pro bono stuff. So, yeah, while we normally talk about a book you can buy or get for free from audible.com/windows, it is a good thing to point out that Audible really is a good member of our society. They've done so much to make these speeches available. And I have to say, it's one thing to watch a speech like this on TV, but when, you know, they have a lot of famous speeches on here. And you want to hear great orators and listen to their thoughts and their ideas and the structure of the speech and the syntax, this is a great way to do it. Kind of eliminate the visual and just kind of absorb it in the audio. Right. So good idea. Yeah. Not only can you get the 2008 conventions, but you can go back to 2004 and hear a state senator at the time, Barack Obama's speech that galvanized the 2004 convention at audible.com. Mm-hmm. Paul, great pick. Very timely. Thank you for suggesting that. I really appreciate it. audible.com/windows. And I thank Audible for their good, you know, they're good civic citizens. Good, they do their job here. This is part of something called like they call it Audible Selects. That's a really neat thing. So, let's see. I think that takes us to the moment you've all been waiting for, Paul's tip of the week, the Vista tip of the week.
Wow. Well, this one just to take it down a notch from the Herald there. This one is not Vista specific, but I think it's useful and it's something I actually do use. I was in D.C. last week and a friend of mine who lives down there, we had dinner and a really technical guy. He asked me, seriously, do you use RSS for anything? And I said, what do you mean? He said, I know you use RSS on your own sites, but he said, do you use it? Do you subscribe to anything in RSS? And if so, what do you use it for? You know, and I thought about that and I said, you know, it's interesting. Obviously the podcast I subscribe to, there's RSS involved.
That's right.
I don't think that is an RSS
thing,
but that's what's going on behind the scenes. Yeah. The truth is, you know, I don't know if it's because of the type of person I am with the different computers, I go back and forth. I don't have a central RSS subscribe type thing. You know, I don't use Outlook to subscribe to RSS feeds. I don't use, you know, any of the browser stuff. I don't use any of the email type applications that have RSS functionality. I really don't use a lot of it. But the one thing I do use, which I think is really interesting, is a service called sendmerss.com. And basically what you do is you paste in the address of an RSS feed, and then you paste in your email address, and then they email you the RSS updates. So it's sort of like a free auto update alert service. And the reason the one big thing that I use this for, and it's going to sound silly, but it's actually pretty useful to me because I would never think to ever check this RSS feed otherwise, is there's a site out there called www.99rental.com. Have you heard of this?
No, what is it?
So every week on iTunes, they have a 99-cent movie rental. Usually the movie rentals on iTunes.
Oh, what a good idea.
No, $2.99.
Yeah.
So every week they send out an RSS, you know, post or whatever, an RSS feed that says, "Hey, this is the movie this week. This week it happens to be Ghostbusters, you know, whatever." But so every week, but via email, I get an email that says, "Hey, the movie this week is whatever it is. It was El Mariachi a week ago. It was, you know, it's been, I don't know what it was. I don't remember anymore." But that's actually what I use RSS for, is to find out what the cheap iTunes rental is.
That's a great idea.
Every week, yeah.
That's kind of a really good idea. I use RSS like crazy.
No, but I know a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Of course. And actually, I would say, to be fair, Google Reader is one of the things.
Okay.
I haven't used
it
recently, but I've had it up on my iPhone, and that's kind of handy.
Yeah, and that's an RSS reader, so.
Of course it is, but the point I'm trying to make there is I don't ever, and I've never once done this, sat down at my computer, booted up into Google Reader and read stuff. I don't think of it like that. Google Reader is another one of those situational computing things. I'm standing in line at Best Buy, waiting for a movie to start. That's when I go through those.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I think that's really the key to RSS, is it's much more flexible than people realize. And yes. And just the reader is the least, it's the least interesting way to use it. There's so many other things you can do with it. Podcasts are a great example, but I like this. So you actually have mail you a feed updates. That's really cool.
Yeah. Now you don't necessarily want to get updates from something that's being updated all day long, right? You don't want to wake up tomorrow and have 30 emails, all of which are stupid posts from some blog or whatever it is. I think you should use this judiciously. You know, this 99-cent iTunes movie thing that I'm referring to
happens once a week.
It's a perfect type of thing to use this for, because it is the type of thing you wouldn't think to go look at. But when you get it via email, you can make the decision right then. Hey, yeah, I do want to rent that movie. It's 99 cents. That's great.
And they don't charge for this?
No.
That's a neat service. Yeah. I guess, you know, there's so many services like this that you figure, well, someday they're going to have to put an ad in there or something.
Sure. but even if they do, who cares? I mean, in this particular case, you know, you want the thing you're getting, and you look at that and you act on it or you don't. So.
All right, time for
all the technology you have. What's that guy? You're like the Mel Blanc of the technology.
You're like a bad Mel Blanc. It's time for.
I'd like to. Hey, look! If I have to pay for it, maybe we could throw in a couple bucks for like a real special effect. Now and then.
We could get something.
Jeez.
We could get something. Here, like, I'll play. You want an actual like horn, like horn fanfare?
Yeah, some kind of Defender of the Crown. You know.
No, that's not probably not what you're thinking of.
Wow. Well, it might be. Depends on how you feel about the pick.
And the pick of the week is...
Wow.
That's sad. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Tell me what the pick is.
I feel like I'm being punished. So, well, I have two. One is, Internet Explorer 8 Beta 2. We talked about that already.
Yeah.
Although I recognize some people will be underwhelmed by that.
But you can get that now. How would you get it? Do you have to go to Microsoft's site to get it?
Yeah, Microsoft.com/Windows/IE, and you'll see a link for downloading Beta 2.
Okay.
It's available in a variety of versions, X64, 32-bit, XP, Vista, 2003 and 2008. I think it's available English, German, simplified Chinese, and one other language, and more coming soon. That kind of thing. But the other... Anyway.
No.
I was like, sorry, I had Mexican for lunch. The other one, the second pick is Terracopy.
Terracopy.
Also suggested by Stephen Kelly. He had suggested last week's pick. This is a really small utility that is basically just a file copy or file move utility.
Uh-huh.
But the difference between this and dragging and dropping in Explorer, in Vista especially, is that it actually works, and it works very quickly. And the big advantage here is, you know, and I do this a lot too. I move a bunch of movies onto a portable drive so I can take them on the road. I have to sit there and leave the thing running for half the day. This actually makes those copies happen much faster. There's a free version. There's also a pro version that has additional functionality you can pay for. But the URL for this is codesector.com/terracopy.php. You could just search for Terracopy, and that would probably get you to the right place, I would imagine.
How does it optimize? I mean, what makes it?
Yeah, how does it work? It's magic.
How do it get so fast?
You have to believe it's magic.
I don't understand. It's so fast.
Oh. Yeah, it is. It is actually pretty quick. I haven't actually sat there and tried to run the same copy side by side, but I will say this. You know, I defend Vista, but you know the file copy stuff in Vista is.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's a disaster, but it's bad, and it is better in Service Pack 1. But you know, it also depends on what you're doing, you know. So in some cases it's better, and some cases it's not. So I think this just gets rid of that. And the way I have been using this is with those large file copies.
Yeah.
And again, you know, as I get ready, I'll be going to Seattle in about a week and a half.
It uses dynamically adjusted buffers to reduce seek time and asynchronous copy speeds. So there
you go.
That's the key.
Take that, Explorer.
So there, have at you.
Apparently, Windows Explorer was written with a single thread and was last updated in 1996.
That thread is about to snap.
Yeah.
Really? Is it true it's not threaded?
No, I don't know. That.
Most people now have at least two processors. The new Nehalem Intel processor, which is going to be, I think it's going to be the base processor, it's quad processor. You better start threading everything, you know?
Well, I'll say that, you know, there's something in Vista where you go to copy a bunch of stuff, and the first thing it does is it says, processing. You know, it's like it examines what you're going to do. So the dialogue sits there and it kind of churns, but it doesn't actually copy anything. And then you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And then finally it pops up and says, okay, now we're going to copy it. But you can never leave it either, right? Because you come, you know, maybe you have a big copy and you come back, and then you realize it only went 33% in, and it said, are you sure you want to do this? Yeah. I was sure I wanted to do that an hour ago when I told you to do it. Thanks for not doing it. You know, that kind of thing. So this sort of eliminates that silliness.
You know, Jay Halgren, who was the guy who recommended XY Plorer, or Zyplorer, or however you pronounce it, to us, which is a really nice replacement for Windows Explorer, sent me a link to a place where you can integrate XY Explorer and TerraCopy, so that when you're doing your copies on XY Explorer, it uses the TerraCopy,
it uses that.
Which is great because then you have the better Explorer and you get the faster copies too. So, but I think that
do me a favor, send that to me. I'd like to see that.
I shall send it to you right now. Yeah,
yeah. I hate to have to do anything like this. I hate it. I would really prefer not to have to install utilities to do things that should just work in Windows. And
especially, if a third party, if a guy in a garage could figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know.
Seems like the Microsoft should be able to just buy the guy. Give him, you know, $1 million. It's Bill Gates. There's more money in his couch cushions. Give him $1 million and say, give us your stuff. He'll go home happy. And you'll have speedy copy, and everybody else will be happy. I just don't understand it. But anyway,
nobody does.
I am not Steve Ballmer, and I thank that. I thank the Lord for that every single day of my life.
Wow.
Even for all the money he has, I wouldn't want to be Steve Ballmer at this point. It's a tough situation. Well, no, I just mean that he's got a very tough road to hoe. I think Ray Ozzie is. I'm starting to come around to the idea that Ray Ozzie may be the savior of Microsoft.
Well, I think you should withhold that until we see him in December. In October. I think the big thing for Microsoft going forward is going to be this PDC event and when they sort of unleash what they're doing with Live Mesh and whether or not this is the big Uber platform that, you know, is going to take us to the next level or whatever. So, we'll see.
Oh, of course I'm reserving judgment. I'm hopeful. I think Ray has the vision. And Ballmer's got to be going, Ballmer's, if you think we hope so, you gotta think Steve Ballmer's going, please make it work.
You mean this whole time
you're making this up?
Yeah. That was 3 years of our lives. What are you doing?
You're making this up. It doesn't work. What are you talking about? All right. Then you would actually see Steve Ballmer's head explode. You would actually explode.
I know
you have a conference call with Mr. Ballmer right now, so we'll let you go and talk to Steve and apologize, please, for me.
Okay.
And we will.
And for me, for being implicit in that,
complicit. Complicit. We will. Yes, you were implicit as well.
Implicit.
The implicit Paul Thurrott is available online at all times at Supersite for Windows. That's winsupersite.com. He's also the news editor for IT Windows IT Pro. And don't forget his new book out like now, right? It's got to be out now soon.
You know what? Soon. Yeah. I think they just finished editing it.
It's so
finally.
You know, we're in the internet era, kids.
I'm just waiting for the financial rewards to come flowing in.
That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why we do this, isn't it, Paul? We do it for the money.
Listen, it's a wow.
There's no money either.
Why do people write books exactly?
Paul Thurrott.
The other stuff was too successful. I just wanted to turn it down a notch.
Yeah, you and me will talk someday.
Okay.
Great to talk to you, Paul. Have a great day. We'll talk again next week on Windows Weekly.